Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. So last week we ended the story with Eldarion leaving again to go off sailing on his ships. And 6 years goes by. And I have to wonder, every time this happens, I understand what 6 years feels like to Arrendis, because she has a normal lifespan, like any regular person. Eldarion comes from the line of Elros, and his lifespan is much longer. But to him, 6 years, I mean, even if he had three times the lifespan of a regular person, maybe feels like 2 years, but that is still a considerable amount of time. And on this adventure, he didn't plan to be away for so long. Things happened that he didn't expect. He found that the haven of Vinyalonde was ruined, as if it had been attacked while he was away, by men near the coast who were growing afraid of the Numenoreans. They were becoming openly hostile and attacking Numenorean settlements on the mainland. Now, this was a different kind of thing than we've heard so far in this story. Men in the mainland were becoming hostile, attacking Numenoreans. And Eldarion heard rumors of some lord in Middle-earth who hated the men of the ships. I have to wonder who that is. Tolkien doesn't tell us explicitly here, but that sure does sound like Sauron spreading lies among the men in Middle-earth. Then he would turn from home, and a great wind came out of the south. So not only was he delayed by the state in which he discovered the settlements, but when he decided to come home, the wind and the sea seemed to work against him, and he was borne far to the northward. He tarried a while at Mithland, but when his ships stood out to sea once more, they were again swept away north and driven into wastes perilous with ice, and they suffered cold. The cold winds drove them into the frigid waters of the north. That was a significant distance from where they were previously. And when you hear winds or the ocean or something like that doing something, you tend to think, oh, it's the Valar. But I have to wonder here, was it the Valar? I'm not sure. They were in the north for so long that when his glance fell upon the green bough that is placed on every ship when they leave, remember that? It had withered. And this was the first time this had ever happened. These boughs were supposed to maintain their color for the entire journey, but this one didn't. And all of these ill omens together seemed to take a toll on Eldarion. Eventually, the venturers return to Numenor after 6 years, delayed by conflict and an angry sea. But eventually Eldarion makes it back, and he seeks out Arrendis. And she looked at him keenly, but did not come forward to meet him. And he stood for a while at a loss for words, as was not his wont, as it says in the text. "Sit, my lord," said Arrendis, "and first tell me of all your deeds. Much must you have seen and done in these long years." I love the kind of backhanded notice of how long he was being gone. It's not a backhanded compliment so much as just a little piece of, hey, I noticed you were gone a long time, buddy. It says, "Then Eldarion began haltingly, and she sat silent, listening, while he told all the tale of his trials and delays. And when he ended, she said, 'I thank the Valar by whose grace you have returned at last. But I thank them also that I did not come with you, for I should have withered sooner than any green bough.' 'Your green bough did not go into the bitter cold by will,' he answered. 'But dismiss me now, if you will, and I think that men will not blame you. In this moment, he's leveling with her. He's basically like, hey, listen, I understand. I was gone way longer than I expected to be. This is not what the plan was. And if you're just going to let go of me now, then I get it. Nobody's going to blame you. You've been ill-treated, even though I didn't mean to ill-treat you, basically, is what he's saying. Yet dare I not to hope that your love will prove stronger to endure even than fair Ulairi, which I'm probably butchering. A-O-I-O-L-A-I-R-E. It's the plant. It's the type of tree that the green bough comes from. So it does prove indeed, said Arendis. It is not yet chilled to the death, Aldarion. Alas, how can I dismiss you when I look on you again, returning as fair as the sun after winter? And Aldarion responds, then let spring and summer now begin. And Arendis says, and let not winter return. The two are reunited. She forgives him and even says that the bough itself is not yet fully frozen. It hasn't completely died, meaning that her own love for him is still there. And so they reunite and they decide to finally set their wedding. And the day comes in the spring of that very next year. In 870 of the second age, that's the year that they actually get married. And we're told that there was music in every house and in the streets, and women and men everywhere were singing. And afterwards, they rode through the entire isle. They did like a tour of Numenor. And eventually they came to Andúnië, where they had their final feast in the celebration of their marriage by Valandil. And the people of the Westlands gathered, because this was the place where Arendis was from. These were her people. They loved her, and they had so much pride in this new queen of Numenor. And we're told that in the morning before the feast, Aldarion gazed out the window of his bedchamber, which looked west over the sea. And he cries out to Arendis. He says, see, Arendis, there is a ship speeding to haven, and it is no ship of Numenor, but one such as neither you nor I shall ever set foot on, even if we would. What he spies out at the ocean, coming to celebrate with them, are the elves. Then Arendis looked forth, and she saw a tall white ship with white birds turning in the sunlight all about it, and its sails glimmered with silver as with foam at the stem it rode toward the harbor. Thus the Eldar graced the wedding of Arendis for love of the people of the Westlands who were closest in their friendship. This is a sign that Aldarion was not lying about visiting the elves, about his friendship with them, his relationship with them on the continent, and that they had heard about this wedding as well and decided to bless it with their presence. Remember, at this time in history, these elves have survived the first age of the world. These are the people of Gil-galad. These are the good elves who are on the continent, who are doing what they can in order to maintain peace and civilization. And we learn about their ship and the decorations. And I love every time we get a look at the way the elves are different from the men. Their ship was laden with flowers for the adornment of the feast, so that all that sat there when evening was come were crowned with Eleanor. Can you imagine the elves walking around putting flower crowns on everybody's heads? And sweet Lysuine, whose fragrance brings heart's ease. Minstrels they brought also, singers who remembered songs of elves and men in the days of Nargothrond and Gondolin long ago. And many of the Eldar, high and fair, were seated among men at the tables. And then there's this beautiful moment. It says, but the people of Andúnië, looking upon the blissful company, looking upon basically all of these elves, these beautiful ancient people, said that none were more fair than Arendis. and they said that her eyes were as bright as were the eyes of Morwen Eladwin of old, or even as those of Avalone. Her eyes were as bright as Morwen, Turin's mother, who was known for being bright-eyed and beautiful. In fact, Morwen Eladwin, her name itself, refers to her beauty being very similar to the elves, and yet dark. And the people of Avalone, the city closest to Valinor. And the elves didn't just bring music and flowers and dancing and compliments. They brought something else as well. Gifts for the married couple. It says, many gifts the Eldar brought also. To Eldarion they gave a sapling tree. This is also worthy of noting. Notice they didn't give Arrendis a tree. They gave Eldarion a tree, a sapling, whose bark was snow white and its stem straight, strong and pliant, as it were of steel. But it was not yet in leaf. I thank you, said Eldarion to the elves. The wood of such a tree must be precious indeed. And notice, that's the first thing he responds with, is, oh, the wood that this tree makes, the function that I can use this tree for when it comes to making boats or homes. Maybe, they respond, we know not. None has ever been hewn. It bears cool leaves in summer and flowers in winter. It is for this that we prize it. I love the response of the elves here because it's so elven. Well, maybe, I mean, I guess if you wanted to kill such a beautiful, useful, wonderful, natural thing, but this tree's different from all the other trees because it bears cool leaves in summer, which is beneficial and creates a wonderful environment, and also flowers in the winter, which is rare and creates a beautiful environment. That's why the elves prize it. That's what they care about. It's very different from Eldarion, and maybe it's there to teach him some sort of lesson. To Arrendis they gave a pair of birds, gray, with golden beaks and feet. They sang sweetly, one to another, with many cadences never repeated through a long thrill of song. But if one were separated from the other, at once they flew together, and they would not sing apart. And notice again that the first question the gift getter responds with betrays something about their perspective on the world. Arrendis asks, how shall I keep them? And the elves respond, let them fly and be free. And I love this. For we have spoken to them and named you, and they will stay wherever you dwell. They mate for their life, and that is long. Maybe there will be many such birds to sing in the gardens of your children. This idea that Arrendis wants to keep them, hold on to them, don't let them go. Much like how she feels with Eldarion. And yet, the elves explain that they've spoken to the birds, which is a wonderful elvish thing to do. And that they're going to go with you wherever you dwell. But more importantly, they will stick together. And when they do get separated, they will find each other again. That's what they do. Almost like this is reassurance to her that if you and Eldarion part ways, you will find each other again. Don't worry about it. And that night, they go to bed. And through the window, there's this like sweet fragrance on the air. And there's the full moon shining and putting silver light over the land. And as Arrendis looks out her balcony, she notices those two birds sitting side by side on her windowsill. So let me tell you a little story. You know that we get sponsors on these podcasts, and Yuffie, who does these smart locks with video cameras in them, reached out and they sent me a smart door lock with a 2K camera, a doorbell, and a finger reader, all the bells and whistles. And I was like, okay, cool. They sent it to me. I already have one on my back door. When I opened this up and installed it, I was like, why didn't I go with Eufy to begin with? Because this is a step above the one that I've been using. The finger reader just works. The 2K camera is so clear. I can see when somebody's at the front door, if it's Amazon or if it's somebody trying to sell me something. It even has night vision and works in the dark. It makes me feel so much safer. Plus, my son can just put his finger on the door and just come right in when he gets home from school. He doesn't have to worry about losing keys, and you don't even have to change the batteries in these because it's got like 10,000 milliwatt hour battery that lasts for like 4 months. Go check these out today. Search for Eufy Video Lock, that's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door. Again, search Eufy Video Lock. I think you'll love it. All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank all of our patrons for being so wonderful and supporting this. Also, before I get into that, if you've been watching the Fallout TV show on Amazon, you might recall that I do the Fallout Lorecast as well. And so if you're not somebody who's played the games, or you have played the games, but you're curious about the lore of that world and how everything works with that, because that series is, it knocked it out of the park. It's amazing. It's doing a really, really excellent job of being Fallout-like and being inspired by the games and extending the lore, all of that stuff. And the Fallout Lorecast podcast has just exploded. We eventually, within just a few days, went from the top 30s or 40s in video games on Apple Podcasts to the number one video game podcast. And then a few days later, we became the number one podcast in Leisure, the parent category of, that's weird. I'm going to leave that in. It's exploding. The show is doing amazingly well. And if you want almost 300 episodes of lore and explanations of all that stuff, go check it out as well. If you like this show, you'll probably like that show. And it's also a show that I launched well before this one. So you can hear a more amateur version of me in the early episodes trying to figure out how to do a lore podcast. It should be a lot of fun. So go check that out if you're interested and you're looking for more stuff. But we got to thank our patrons. Welcome to Liz and Atle Morton for signing up. Thank you so much for being here. Also, I have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Here we go. AK Music Lover, Anakin Skywalker, Apollo, Aragorn III, Atle Morton, Austin C, Azul Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Black Squirrel, Brandy D, Cutter Metalworks, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Drupal, Fulcrum, Gimli A Break, Gemma D, Jesse P, J Eggs, Jezzer, Kate L, Katie S, Capenna, Lore FC, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Michael M, Nick K, Nostrils of Sauron, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Peace Lutheran Church, Richard J, Rosie Rose, Sam B, Seju, TJT, and Tour Son of Hur. Thank you so much for all of your support. Also, if you'd like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, of course, I'll read that out on a future episode of the show. If it's a 5-star review, you can rate the show on Spotify or whatever other podcatcher you listen to this on. You can also share it with your friends and all of that stuff. But thank you so much for being here. I'm not going to take any more of your time in the middle of this episode because we've got to find out what happens with Eldarion and Arrendis after the wedding. Let's go see. So after the feast is done, the elves go home. After their tour of the island ends, they head back to Armenelos. And this is where the king wanted them to live. He has a house prepared for them amidst a garden of trees. And the elven tree is planted there and the birds sing in its boughs. And they build a little home for themselves. And 2 years pass. And they start a family. Arrendis conceives a child, and in the spring of the year after, she bore to Eldarion a daughter. Even from birth, the child was fair and grew ever in beauty. The woman most beautiful, as old tales tell, that ever was born in the line of Elros, save our Zimrafel, the last. It's an interesting thing to note here that at the end of the line of Elros, is this other individual, R. Zimrafel, who's also supposedly beautiful, maybe even more beautiful than this daughter of theirs. And with a new child comes naming the child, which is very important, as it is for Tolkien as much as it is for these people in the story, because their names have meaning. They decide to start calling her Enkalime. Enkalime means the most bright. And we're told that Arrendis has some thoughts about this. It says, in her heart she was glad, for she thought, surely now Aldarion will desire a son to be his heir, and he will abide with me long yet. She's still trying to hold on to him, to keep him there. For in secret she still feared the sea and its power upon his heart, and though she strove to hide it and would talk with him of his old ventures and his hopes and designs, she watched jealously if he went to his house ship or was much with the venturers. So every time there was any hint that he was interested in the sea again, it bothered her. And there's one time in particular where he asked her if she'd like to go to the sea house, Iambar. And she was not happy with that. So he never pushed the issue again. He becomes very quiet about anything having to do with the building of ships or the goings-on of the ocean. So during the next few years, Aldarion has his focus, again, changed. He decides to take up the mastering of the forests again. He makes a focus here because, and this is a theme that keeps popping up in this story, the island is only so big. Its forests only can provide so much wood. You have to grow the material. And if you cut down all the trees in the forest, you can't make any more wood. And wood is important not only for ships, but also for homes. We're told that the population of Numenor continues to grow during these years. More and more people need wood for building. And even though the Numenoreans were great with stone and metals, other materials that they could gather from the environment, they also loved wood. They used it for carving, for building, for furniture, for homes. And so this became a major focus for Aldarion, making sure that the forests were plentiful, that for every tree he felled, he planted more than just the one that fell. He also added diversity to the forests. He included different types of trees and mixed and grew them in different amounts for different reasons. He became very, very careful with the managing of these forests. But there was still this feeling that he was treating the trees not as trees in and of themselves, but as a way to get material. Whereas Arrendis loved the trees simply for being trees. And then we get this glimpse of another conversation between Arrendis and Nuneth, her mother, who has some keen insights on personality. Nuneth says, ships he may love, my daughter, for those are made by men's minds and hands. But I think it is not the winds or the great waters that so burn his heart, nor yet the sight of strange lands, but some heat in his mind or some dream that pursues him. And it may be that she struck near the truth, for Aldarion was a man long-sighted, and he looked forward to days when the people would need more room and greater wealth. And whether he himself knew this clearly or no, he dreamed of the glory of Numenor and the power of its kings, and he sought for footholds whence they could step to wider dominion. So it was that ere long he turned again from forestry to the building of ships. And a vision came to him of a mighty vessel, like a castle, with tall masts and great sails like clouds, bearing men and stores enough for a town. Then in the yards of Romena, the saws and hammers were busy, while among many lesser craft, a great ribbed hull took shape, at which men wondered. Terumphanto, the wooden whale, they called it. But that was not its name. And right here, you would expect that Tolkien would reveal to us the name of this great ship, if it's not actually Terumphanto, which is just what people seem to be calling it. But he doesn't. And we have to consider here what Aldarion's plan actually is. And again, I feel like we're given this split view of what the potential is for his cares about the future, for his seagoing, all of the things that are big concerns to him. Are they for the betterment of Numenor and its people, or are they for domination and control? And it seems to be split every time. It's as if Tolkien wants us to wonder about the true intentions of Aldarion. Is he building this great ship in order to colonize and conquest other lands? Or is he doing so in a way to build support for his people, to give them other ways to gather material, like the wood that is so hard for them to maintain and cultivate on the island due to the limitations of their forests? Is this good for the Numenoreans? Or is this ultimately heading in the wrong direction? And it isn't revealed yet. Arrendis learns about everything that he's doing, the building of this great ship, even though the information doesn't come from him. And we're told that she is unquiet. And so one day, she says to him, "What is all this busyness with ships, Lord of the Havens?" I love that she calls him Lord of the Havens, as if that's like, it's a formal title, right? It's not husband, not my dear, not something like that. Lord of the Havens, like, this is your job. What are you doing, Lord of the Havens? "Have we not enough? How many fair trees have been cut short of their lives in this year?" She spoke lightly and smiled as she spoke. You could tell that she was trying not to turn this into an argument or a fight. And he responds, "A man must have work to do upon land, even though he have a fair wife. Trees spring and trees fall. I plant more than are felled." And he also spoke in a light tone, but he did not look at her in the face. And they did not speak again on these matters. You could tell that they are carefully dancing around the conversation. Anybody who's been in a relationship for any significant period of time has probably dealt with a conversation like this, where both people know where it's going. They both have a feeling about what the other person actually thinks. And yet it's not really being addressed directly. It's the elephant in the room kind of conversation. And they're having that. And sure enough, time passes again. And when their daughter is about 4 years old, Aldarion declares openly to Arrendis his desire to sail again from Numenor. It says here, "She sat silent, for he said nothing that she did not already know, and words were in vain. He tarried until the birthday of Ancalime and made much of her that day. She laughed and was merry, though others in the house were not so. And as she went to bed, she said to her father, 'Will you take me this summer, Titania?'" Remember, Titania is one of those familial phrases. It's kind of like a sweet phrase you would say to a loved one. "I should like to see the white house in the sheepland that Mamil tells of." Aldarion did not answer. And the next day he left the house and was gone for some days. When all was ready, he returned and bade Arrendis farewell. Then against her will, tears were in her eyes. They grieved him and yet irked him, for his mind was resolved and he hardened his heart. "Come, Arrendis," he said, "8 years I have stayed. You cannot bind forever in soft bonds the son of the king, of the blood of Tur and Erendil. And I am not going to my death. I shall soon return." "Soon?" she said. "But the years are unrelenting, and you will not bring them back with you. And mine are briefer than yours. My youth runs away. And where are my children? And where is your heir? Too long and often of late is my bed cold. Often of late I have thought you preferred it so, said Eldarion, but let us not be wroth, even if we are not of like mind. Look in your mirror, Arrendis. You are beautiful, and no shadow of age is there yet. You have time to spare to my deep need. 2 years, 2 years is all that I ask. But Arrendis answered, say rather, 2 years I will take, whether you will or no. Take 2 years then, but no more. A king's son of the blood of Arendil should also be a man of his word. Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.